WAMC will be providing live election coverage really beginning tonight during All Things Considered. Our WAMC coverage will begin at 8 o'clock. But if you're seeking a more group experience, the Tang Teaching Museum on the campus of Skidmore College in Saratoga will be having an election night extravaganza, a full evening of dialogue, activities, and refreshments with live coverage of the voting results. The event is co-sponsored by Skidmore College Club's Democracy Matters, College Republicans, and College Democrats. The event is part of the exhibition A More Perfect Union. It is free, it's open to the public, and it runs from 7 until midnight. And to tell us more, we welcome the following: Ian Berry, Dayton Director of the Tang Teaching Museum at Skidmore College and curator of A More Perfect Union. Ian, good morning.
Good morning.
Manita Sungvi is with us. She's an associate professor in management and business at Skidmore College, who specializes in political marketing and issues of gender and power. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we also welcome Ron Seib. He is an associate professor of political science who specializes in the American presidency, the U.S. Congress, political psychology, and the media and politics. We welcome you to the program as well.
Well, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. All right. So how did this whole thing come together and to become a part of the More Perfect Union exhibit?
Well, the museum has really become the town square for our community on campus and happily for our region around Skidmore. All through this election season, we've been having three or four events a week with hundreds and hundreds of people, and we're here to report that the community around us is very engaged and very upbeat and earnestly asking lots of questions, and we're very happy for the museum to provide the platform for that to happen.
So let's just take one step back and tell us a little bit about this idea of A More Perfect Union and the spot and the square and all of that.
Yeah, well, Nashville artist Mel Ziegler made a project called Flag Exchange, where he went from state to state, almost like a political candidate, knocking on doors of people that were flying weathered American flags and asking if they would like to exchange their weathered flag for a new one. He completed that over 3 years, going from state to state, and hanging from the ceiling of the Wachenheim Gallery at the Tang are each of one flag from every state with a weathered edge. And that provides the convention hall-like atmosphere for a variety of amazing activities that have been happening on campus. My wonderful colleagues have been part of. Hundreds and hundreds of students have shown up and participated. And Mel's project gives us a great foil to ask where you stand. Do you see these flags as representative of something tattered, something needing repair, or do you see these flags as something, a symbol of honored service? People have been feeling both those things in the space, so it's been an excellent backdrop.
So before we talk to our two other distinguished guests this morning, give us just a thumbnail sketch of what will be happening tonight.
Well, we have some of the best commentators. WAMC is fantastic, but we have some fantastic people at Skidmore who will be guiding us through the results and whatever happens today and this evening. So we will have updates. We will have big screens going all night with the live results. The students have organized performances, halftime entertainment of sorts throughout the evening. We have.
Is there a halftime?
It's multiple halftime.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Exactly.
I didn't know that was. I got to put that in my contract. I didn't know that.
You can get your picture taken with cutouts of
the candidates.
The candidates. Lots of food, lots of fun. You should not be alone on election
What
night.
Network do you put on to watch the results?
Multiple. We like to watch.
All right,
we
yes.
like to watch Diversity. How different channels call different moments through the night.
Excellent. A very good learning opportunity. So, Manita, what's going to happen today?
Wow.
don't have to stay up late. If you can just tell us what's going to happen.
End it right now, Manita. You can do it.
Well, it seems like the polls are indicating that Clinton is going to win New York.
Okay. All right. We'll begin there.
Very good.
And what do you find? So let's, given your study,
yes,
and your background, mm-hmm. what have you found fascinating about this race, and what will you be looking at tonight?
Well, so there are lots of issues, right? This election has been all about gender. It's not just Hillary and the fact that she's a woman, right? It's
right.
also the fact that Hillary and her lack of femininity, right, that she's not enough of a woman for some people. But it's also Trump and his need to talk about his masculinity. And so will Trump actually concede if he loses, right? Is Mike Pence actually going to make that concession speech? Is Trump going to make it? What will that tell us about his campaign and what happens tomorrow morning?
So let's talk about the issue of Hillary Clinton and the gender question, because yes, you're talking about the Trump masculinity, but you can also talk about the misogyny in the campaign.
Absolutely.
as well. There was an editorial, we talked about it yesterday, in the Los Angeles Times by a columnist whose name I don't have in front of me, but it was a good point about that this should be, if Hillary Clinton wins, it should be a more historic moment than it is feeling like it is, because the idea that we are electing our first woman president is kind of getting lost.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, it's definitely in some places, you know, just how horrible this election has been, right? And how much vitriol there has been sort of takes away from the fact that, you know, Clinton will be the first woman president. But there's also a lot of excitement in some places. So I don't know if you've heard of Pantsuit Nation.
Yes.
It's this initiative on Facebook and now has the website and stuff. And there are lots of women who are getting so excited. I'm wearing white today because I'm going to go vote. And I want to honor the suffragists who gave us the right to vote who wore white, and Geraldine Ferraro who wore white, and Hillary Clinton who wore white when she accepted the nomination. And so there are people who are wearing pantsuits. There are men who are wearing, you know, the pantsuit t-shirt.
Yep.
And so, you know, there are all sorts of different ways people are showing excitement. And Pantsuit Nation was interesting in the way that people felt that they could not put this on their actual Facebook wall. So it started as a secret group, right?
Yeah.
And they felt that if they said something about Clinton, they were getting so much backlash. And this became a safe space to be excited about the first female, you know, precedent. So that's an interesting point of the misogyny that we're seeing in the campaign, right?
Absolutely. So Ron Seib, let me talk to you and ask basically the same question, which is, what have you found fascinating thus far throughout the year and a half, almost 2 years of this campaign, and what you'll be watching for tonight?
Yeah, I think this has been a pretty bad year for political scientists. So speaking as a member of my own guild, if you will, I think we've had a lot of difficulty trying to predict what was going to happen next. I think when the campaign started, we're going back to the primaries, a lot of people thought that this would be a campaign about income inequality to a large degree. That seems to have been sort of lost in the cacophony of sound we've had, both in the primaries and the general election. I think there was certainly a sense, if you go back to the Trump nomination, and I think we're all struggling to figure out just really what explains the rise of Trump and also what I would call the Trump phenomenon. Because I have a sense that, you know, as much as we want to focus on Donald Trump as a personality, and he's a very vivid personality, there is certainly something underneath Donald Trump. There's a movement, whatever you want to call it, which is sort of emerging. And in some ways, the question I'm actually going to be addressing tonight at the Tang Museum is what comes after Election Day. Is Trump a kind of transitory phenomenon that, you know, Trump has his moment? Let's just, for argument's sake, say that Hillary Clinton does win the presidency tonight. Or is, as Manita was saying, are we going to see maybe something unprecedented where Donald Trump does not concede and actually challenges the results? What's going to happen to the so-called Trump voter, Trump electorate after Election Day? Is this going to be a group of voters who, many of them are first-time voters, who continue to turn out in elections, continue to sort of in many ways cause disturbances? So I'm kind of interested in that. And so in some ways, for me, as much as tonight is a very important moment, I love Election Day. I went and voted today, and I felt all giddy and sort of buoyant about it.
Yeah.
I'm sort of more thinking about what happens next. One thing we know from past elections is that when candidates make promises, they usually try to keep them. As much as we think that political candidates are a little bit, I would say, disingenuous or they dissemble, the truth is most candidates try to keep their promises. I think one of the issues following this campaign, because it has been so, I think, sort of in many ways character-oriented and has been in many ways, I think, fair to say, ugly, you know, what is the agenda for the first 100 days of whoever wins tonight? What is, again, you know, I think Barack Obama, when he was elected in 2008 in particular, we knew what he was going to do. There was going to be a stimulus package. There was going to be some sort of legislation to put stronger regulations on the banks. There was going to be a health care proposal. So I think there was a pretty good, I think, for many Americans' mind, a pretty good sense of what follows. I'm not sure for either Secretary Clinton or Donald Trump, I have a good fix on that. Mm. And so for me, Election Day is like a wedding. Like we're anticipating it. Everybody's sort of, you know, looking at it as a single day. But, you know, American democracy is kind of the marriage. And what happens after wedding day is something that I think we have to be concerned about, because I am a firm believer that campaigns do matter. That, you know, what candidates say during campaigns, they don't lock them in to any kind of agenda, but they certainly influence their agenda. And if you have a campaign like the one we had Nat this time, I'm sort of wondering what are going to be the key issues or key policy priorities that are going to come out of it.
Did either of you see the 60 Minutes piece on Sunday with Frank Luntz? Did you see
no,
that piece?
But I did hear that he had a very unfortunate focus group. He got very angry.
It was a focus group that was yeah. all over. But he said how it really typified the electorate, and that in all of the years in the three decades that he's been doing this kind of thing of bringing focus groups together, that there was such animosity, and people were yelling and screaming, and they were from all spectrums of Republican, Democrat, and those who were still somewhat undecided, and a very small group, but they're yelling and they're screaming. And he talked at the end about the importance, and this is why I'm bringing it up, because you mentioned about how you're so interested in what happens next. And the thing he said that struck me, and I'm interested in your feedback on it, is that whoever wins tonight, mm-hmm. what they say is going to be so important, and he feels vitally important, of how we move forward, not just over the next few days, but over the next few months and even the next few years,
right.
in bringing people together because of the huge divisions within the country.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm going to let Manita and Ian chime in on this too, of course. But I certainly agree, because I do think that, you know, again, particularly Donald Trump's case that he may, not case, but the argument that the election may be rigged, that there may be vote fraud, that he may challenge the results, that's very unconventional and unorthodox. And so how the loser, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, accepts the verdict, and it's sort of unusual moment in the sense that, you know, the idea of the peaceful transfer of power is sort of sewn into the fabric of American political culture ever since the election of 1800, where there was actually a question whether the victor in that case, Thomas Jefferson, would be accepted by the opposing party, the Federalist Party, which has also been dramatized in Hamilton, the musical.
Right.
But I do think this is an unusual moment in the sense that we don't know, will there be a concession speech? Will there actually be a kind of understanding that the peaceful transfer of power has to happen? In some ways, I think, right, what the candidates say is really important. But ultimately, it's what the voters say, too. I mean, we've had moments certainly in the past where the loser in a presidential campaign had the opportunity to challenge the results. I think of 1960 in particular, when Richard Nixon thought he had a very good case to challenge the results in Illinois and Texas because there was evidence of vote fraud. He decided not to do that. But I also think that Nixon understood that the voters accept the verdict on Election Day, that we oftentimes see, obviously, and I think most people know this, that immediately after the verdict is in, there is kind of a spike in approval for the winning candidate. So even those people who may have voted against the winner begin to rally around the candidate, and that's normal. So I think in some ways, and this is why I may be a little bit more sanguine than other people, I think even if Donald Trump were to claim that the election were rigged and he wanted to challenge the results, unless the election is very close in a number of key states, which is not implausible,
right,
that it's going to be very difficult for him to make that case to the American people that this he was denied the presidency because of a rigged election. And I think there will be an acceptance of Hillary Clinton as the president in that case, if that's the outcome. Now, I should put the caveat, I'm the worst Trumpologist of all time. I've been wrong about Donald Trump since the beginning.
Well, you and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, no, yeah. So I guess in this case, it's collective guilt.
I mean, this is, you look up Outlier, and this is, right? This
yeah,
is
right
what we've been going
the
through.
Curve on this,
yeah,
I think.
Everyone.
But I always have to put that qualification that, you know, what I say about what Trump is going to do or not do, or the reaction to what Trump does or doesn't do as well. So again, I'm saying that based on sort of past patterns that the American electorate will accept the winner of the election, but maybe this is the disruptive moment. Maybe this is the outlier. So as much as I have great confidence in American democracy and the wisdom of the American people, sometimes that confidence can be punctured.
And your confidence, Minid?
I'm pretty confident. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I believe that we will get together and support the candidate that's going to be there and that we're going to have for the next 4 years. But a lot of eyes are on Trump tonight in seeing what happens and how he accepts the decision. I mean, if he accepts it well, his electorate, his supporters will be happy to sort of move along. And that's the important time where Trump needs to show leadership, right? This is that pivotal moment where Trump needs to say, yes, you know, we played a good fight and we lost. But it's going to be hard for him to do that because he's going to lose to a woman. And that's a hard thing for Trump to deal with.
Do you think, I don't disagree with you, but do you think really it is a woman or just that he's going to lose in general? I mean, I mean, he doesn't seem to take any losing well in that regard, but I'm not discounting the fact that it's going to hurt even more because it's to a woman.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's already said, right? He doesn't like people who lose. He even said that for John McCain. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah. I do not think that he's a hero. I like winners. And so there's no doubt that he's going to take it hard if he loses because he's losing. But to lose to a woman, right, especially after all the things that he has said about women, I think would hurt him even more.
But it is, and this is going off something Ron said, which I think is really interesting, that yes, so it's up to what the candidate says tonight, but it's also, you know, the people have a voice in this. So the people will have spoken. The people are going to the ballot box today, and they are speaking, and they are letting it be known. So if the, let's say, in the end, the 45% who voted for Donald Trump, or 43% or whatever it turns out to be, isn't enough to win the White House. But the cue is going to come from the candidate, right? The cue is going to come from Donald Trump himself tonight as to whether, God forbid, I mean, you can go anything from a smooth, peaceful transition to nothing to, God forbid, something violent. Yeah. How much is it on the candidate?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mita.
And I'm hoping really that if it does happen that Trump loses, that there are people in his campaign who sort of, you know, say, no, this is an important piece of the American democracy. And I'm hoping that Mike Pence is that person who steps up and says, this is an important piece that you need to do. You need to have your concession speech. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's Donald Trump. Who knows?
Right. We don't know.
Yeah.
So, Ian, all of this will be going on at the Tang tonight, and we'll be having discussions, I assume, very similar to this one.
Yeah, and I can tell you, you know, I did see that uncomfortable exchange on TV this weekend, and the amount, the tone of the exchange that we've been seeing in debates about some of the hottest topics facing us, immigration, gender, trans issues, climate change, the way the students in the community are speaking to each other, at least in our experience, has been very inspiring and upbeat. It's been a great thing to watch, and I expect that we'll have a wonderful time tonight. A lot of excited people and a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm. So you have done events similar to this in the sense of for the debates and so forth, and they've gone well.
Yeah, and I must say, Chris Gibson and Paul Tonko modeled a beautiful conversation on the stage underneath the flags where they talked about compromise and they talked about working together and they talked about knowing history and the American history and legal precedents and legal history. And they modeled for our community and our students in particular a way of talking deeply about issues that I think set a beautiful example for how politicians and how our representatives can act when they move on.
I had this moment last night. I was teaching. I teach over at St. Rose, and several of my, were talking about voting, and several of my students said that this was their first presidential election. Mm-hmm. Man, what a way to start. put that into perspective
I'll
for these
kids.
I'll
give you the flip side of that, which is I have an 85-year-old mother-in-law who is quite despondent about the choices she's given and has said, I can't believe I'm going out on this election. I should point out she's one of those dark Irish women who's like always mawkish and maudlin and melancholic. And my wife is very happy about this statement because my wife feels like she is so stubborn that she will stay alive for another 4 years.
Just to
so
see
she can cast a vote for a candidate she believes in. So
I agree.
So I've seen it from that end. But I've also seen it from some of our students, too, coming to my office and feeling a little bit unsure.
Well, to let them know that this isn't normal.
Yeah, it's
you know,
it's
that
an
this
abnormal
is
situation.
This is not a normal situation right. for an election. We don't usually go through this.
Well, and we have the two most unpopular candidates in American presidential history, I think. And I think that they're and we just have the misfortune of them running against each other at the same time. So it is unusual. It is a kind of, you know, almost perfect storm that we have going on here. But I do try to, you know, when I talk, you know, to my students, I do try to reassure them, and maybe I am being a little bit too, I guess, Panglossian here, that, you know, we've had rock and roll, raucous campaigns in the past.
Right.
I'm actually having students in one of my courses write on past campaigns which were quite vicious and quite rancorous. 1928 with Al Smith running for the presidency as the first Catholic, and the anti-Catholicism and the KKK maybe mobilized there. Even 1964, of course, with Barry Goldwater running against Lyndon Baines Johnson. And some of the ads from that campaign are actually at the Tang Museum.
There's in the elevator.
There's something called the Political Echo Chamber, which is this endless loop of political ads that's being running. There are historic ads going back to really the beginnings of political advertising in the 1950s. And it sounds very assaultive that you're going to sit there and watch these terrible ads, because I know we're all tired of negative ads. But it's really interesting and fascinating to see just sort of how the techniques have changed and how some elements have changed the same. But I do think that, I mean, in some ways, I think by having students do this exercise, I want them to understand that as singular as this moment seems, there are parallels in the past. And maybe there's never been a candidate like Donald Trump, but we've certainly had politics like this in the past. And sometimes we've actually come out of it, not to say better, but I talk about the Al Smith campaign in 1928, who ran as a Democrat. He was, again, somebody who was vilified by any Catholic voters out of Al Smith's campaign, which was a losing campaign. We kind of got the New Deal because he mobilized a number of urban, ethnic, Catholic, lower-class voters who became part of the New Deal coalition for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And without those voters, Roosevelt's not elected in 1932 or 1936, and we may not have the New Deal. So sometimes it's
I like
because,
your optimism.
See, as I said, I'm a little bit too Panglossian. I get criticized
that
for that.
That is great. Yeah. We only have about 15 seconds, but go ahead.
Not all students are that unhappy, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of students who are so excited about voting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And
too.
It's their first vote, and they're voting it for a woman. And there's a lot of excitement on campus for
too. And that is exciting. Well, nice to
so
see you.
So come
as well.
Tonight and get a little taste of that.
Yeah, get a little taste of optimism.
The Tang's Election Night Extravaganza runs from 7 to midnight. It will feature dialogue, activities, refreshments, and live coverage of the voting results. Tang.skidmore.edu. Thank you all for being here. Great pleasure.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Have a great day today.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.